Blog Talk Radio.
This is Pop Health Week on the Blog Talk Radio and Affiliate Networks, brought to you by Health Innovation Media, monitoring the innovation impulse from idea to business model and emerging best practices. Welcome, everyone. I'm Greg Masters, the producer and co-host of the show, and joining me in the virtual studio is my colleague, principal co-host and co-founder of Pop Health Week, Mr. Fred Goldstein. Hey, Fred.
Hey, Greg. How's it going today?
Doing well. How's the weather in Jacksonville?
It's beautiful today. Wish I were outside enjoying it.
Okay, well, we'll get you right to that. So for those of you not familiar with Fred, he's a subject matter expert with deep roots in the hospital, health plan, health, wellness, and prevention space, from disease management to population health. Fred's a board member and past chair of the Population Health Alliance, also known as PHA, having served most recently as its executive director, and now captains the ship at Accountable Health LLC, a co-sponsor of this broadcast. And now a few words about our special guest today, Dr. Roy Hinman. Roy Hinman, MD, is the founder and CEO of Island Doctors, which employs more than 50 people within 14 offices in Florida, stretching from Jacksonville to Interlaken and New Smyrna Beach. He opened his first family practice office in 1991, on Anastasia Island in St. Augustine, Florida. Dr. Hinman is a back-to-basics pioneer and began to take full-risk Medicare Advantage in 1998. Since then, the practice has grown to approximately 16,000 capitated Medicare Advantage members in Florida. He anticipates having 20 offices by the end of 2015 to meet the demand. In addition to his owned offices, they also manage a network of 32 affiliated providers, reflecting a clinical team inclusive of allopathic and osteopathic physicians, as well as mid-level practitioners from physician assistants to advanced practice nursing, with innovative programs targeting diabetes, COPD, cholesterol, smoking, and weight loss. Dr. Hinman and his team understand how to keep patients healthy, but also how to manage the clinical and financial risk associated with risk contracting. Considering we're some three-plus years into the ACO experiment and that all roads, whether Medicare Advantage, bundled pricing, ACOs, pioneers, or shared savings, lead to improved population health via the pursuit of the triple aim, this is a rather timely and instructive conversation. So, Fred, with that brief bio and introduction, over to you. Help us get to know this visionary physician leader.
Thank you so much, Greg. And Roy, welcome to the show.
Hey, Greg, Fred, thanks. Appreciate being on.
Glad to have you. As Greg introduced in that opening intro, you've been involved in this for quite some time, and obviously there's this transition process that hospitals and providers are going through as they move through these various payment options. What first got you started in going full risk in this area?
Actually, it was a chance working with Fred Goldstein way back in the day when there was a Medicaid HMO that was a type of risk involvement in St. Augustine and in the surrounding area. And it actually gave me the idea, you quickly discovered, that if you can keep people out of the emergency room, offer them a nice facility to come see you, that essentially that your the risk is slim, because if they see your office and you can do the, you don't, in the military you don't have to win every battle, you pick the battles you want to win. If you can work on their diabetes, you work on get their cholesterol, their LDLs down well below 100. Ours are about 75 on average for all our patients, over 18,000 of them. And if you can make those things happen, then essentially they don't go to the hospital, and there's a reward on the residual income level. We learned that with Healthcare USA, which Fred was helping run that thing at that time. And so I translated that from serving as a medical director for that Medicaid HMO and had a chance to do a risk contract with Humana in 1998, and I've been doing it ever since.
That's fantastic. You briefly touched upon some of the diseases you work with and focus on, and you've talked often about keeping it simple. Can you dive into that a little bit deeper, what specifically you try to get accomplished?
Yeah, it is the KISS principle we operate on. Keep it simple, stupid. Now, the ACOs, which are, you know, there's always opportunity amongst chaos, but the ACO is an HMO at-risk Medicare Advantage proposition is really an ACO on steroids, and that's what the ACOs are attempting to reformulate and to achieve something like that. Now, the key thing is not a reduction in cost. You think of HMOs going in, giving the lowest price to the hospitals, to the a scorched earth policy, paying the radiology and the specialists, 70% of Medicare, 65%, whatever. That's really not how this works to be effective. The whole thing, you have to run an HIO position. That's a health improvement organization, not HMO. You don't want to maintain. You actually have to improve patients' health. While everybody talks about that, you're actually able to achieve this if you focus in on just a few key areas. Once again, pick the battles you want to win. Number one, get your cholesterol down. Every study shows lower is better. There are no studies that do not show that. So it's very simple, very inexpensive to get our average LDL is 75 down at 75 or below LDLs, and my hospitalization rate is probably about 40% of that of standard Medicare patients. That's admits per thousand or bed days per thousand, whichever way you want to look at it. We do a lot of weight loss. In fact, my office staff is paid $7 a pound for every pound that our managed care patients lose. That's a bonus system for them. So, and if they gain it back, it gets taken away. So the weight loss is extremely important for patients' long-term morbidity, mortality, and actually their happiness. You know, you show me a patient who loses weight, I'll show you a healthier patient, I'll show you a very happy patient. And so that breeds into loyalty, because also we have the highest retention rate in the state of Florida for Humana. So if you can get patients healthier, you kill about three or four birds with one stone by keeping the patient alive longer and increasing your retention rate. So those kind of basic things, working hard on their diabetes and following their lab work on a regular basis, that's the way you make it. One other real quick point, because this is important. We see our patients on average about 8 times per year as Medicare Advantage patients. They have no copay up front. What an amazing thing that is. So even that reduces their disinclination to come in and see us, because they don't cost us anything for them to come in. So it's amazing the patients see me 8 times a year. And when you can look at that, in an excess of 8,000 patients are within our wholly owned network, I think that's quite an amazing thing.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So you've also talked about this concept of, you know, obviously there's no copay to come in. You also, I believe, have a rule in your practice regarding if somebody shows up unannounced. Can you discuss that and how important that is?
Yeah, so to be successful in the ACO or HMO or risk model of any kind, the key thing is to make sure that your patients are seen whenever it is they feel that they need to be seen. Now, it's traditionally, providers will say, look, we're busy right now. I need to leave at 5. This patient, they don't look sick. Come back tomorrow. What will happen is in northeastern Florida, 67% of Medicare patients that walk into the ER, if they stub their toe, they're going to be admitted for some other thing. Not what they stub their toe on, but the fact is that they have underlying CHF, that maybe they've got 1+ pedal edema, and we're already being followed for that. But the ER docs, can't be too careful with this. We're going to have to check your BNP, your troponins. Oh, it's a little up. We can't take it. You got to spend the night here, maybe 2 or 3 or 4 days. Lord knows how long you have to stay before we feel you're good enough to come out. So, and that can come from a patient that goes in the ER later in the evening for some perceived thing. To them, it's important, but to your docs in the office, they don't think so. So we have a strict policy. Once a patient walks in our door before any time during the day, before closing time, they will automatically be seen 100% of the time. That's a fireable offense if somebody does not see a patient. Now, it's very simple, but they don't have to see the patient. They can always call me up and explain to me why they're too busy to see that patient before they're ready to go home. Now, personally, I've never had anybody call me up and explain that to me, and I haven't had to fire anybody yet, but that's one of the few fireable offenses that we have, is that patients must be seen when they come in, no question about it, 100% of the time, and that's it. And it's extremely important, and that's something we do that it's very, very few other offices do.
So these multiple ways to get the patient seen, make them happy, keep them engaged, all keep them out of the ER, obviously. And as you manage them, you mentioned you get reductions in hospitalizations and bed days, and you track that, and I guess you report that back by doctor, clinic, et cetera, so everybody sort of knows what their rates are?
Yeah, we have a we have a large organization. We have over 135 people in our organization, 27 physicians, PAs. We're split about half and half. But we have people to track. We have to do HEDIS, HEDIS quality measurements, medical risk adjustment measurements. We have to look at that. We have somebody that tracks all, every hospitalization, so we follow up. As soon as they come out of the hospital, then we need to make sure that they get a phone call and that they can we see them within the next 7 days. The sooner the better. You know, sometimes they're feeling sick, they don't want to come in. But we try to get them immediate follow-up. So you have to have an organization in place, but everything's geared to make sure the patients have prompt, swift follow-up, and we never turn anybody away. Anytime that they want to be seen, that we make sure that we see them, whether it's uncomfortable or inefficient for us, we're going to see them no matter what. And the dividend that pays is huge.
And you've also talked some about some of the other unique services you provide. I remember going into your practice and seeing at your clinic the wall on weight loss and some of the things you talked about you do for COPD patients or exercise. Can you touch on some of those extra little features
yeah,
you
of the,
offer?
So there's a the key thing of the weight loss. We have our own weight loss plan. We call it Triangle Diet. Very simple, uncomplicated. We get the starch out. Get the fat out, and everything is boiled, baked, steamed, or grilled. You basically don't fry things. It's a simple visual thing. So we get something very simple, people eating regular food, and we say, look, these are the things you don't eat. These are the things you do eat. You eat these things, you lose weight. You eat these things, you gain weight. So stop that. Don't eat this. So it's we give them something, once again, the KISS principle. Keep it simple, stupid, and we follow them up, and every week we give them something to do. We had something, and we have a list of about 12 different things. Every week, every time they come back, we give them one thing to do, and that's kind of the, you know, you can't do 100 things at one time, but you can focus on one thing. We keep them engaged, and our patients lose a lot of weight. Last year they lost over 10,000 pounds. So that's a nice big bonus, $7 a pound that we pay out to our back office staff. So because they're the ones that do the hard work to spend time with the patients, where they act as their cheerleaders, their jailers, their best friend, you know, the person that takes their food away from them, and they're champion. And so it's a gift that we try to give to the patients is their own health. They're the only ones. See, we have to remember patients are the key to this thing, in that we can't get patients healthy, but we can help patients get themselves healthy. So that's the key part of the whole thing of health improvement, is to work with, convince the patient that they can get themselves healthier, and then we provide some of the tools and the follow-up and some of the things that provide medications that can help them get there. But it's up to them to do it. But once you can convince them, working on a daily basis whenever they come in, that they're in charge and we're there to help them, that we're not going to get them well, we're going to help them get themselves well, it's amazing what can happen. And economically, the results are huge.
Fantastic. You touched briefly on ACOs. What are your thoughts, if you were to talk to providers today about ACOs, what would you say?
Well, the ACO is they're attempting to do on a federal level what the what Medicare Advantage has done in a risk program for years and years. The problem is it's a much poorer deal for individual providers because, once again, the government is going to give them only a much smaller amount of return. It's usually 50%. Medicare Advantage will work at a higher percentage with their providers that take Medicare risk programs, the organization work with that. And so, first of all, there's less revenue to be had. Secondly, the government makes you jump through a whole lot more hoops. It's kind of, everybody's had EMR and knows how many hoops you got to go through to recoup whatever funding that they promised you. And it's even worse on the ACO. Not only that, but the ACO guys, they have no idea of what risk is involved. People who work with Medicare Advantage, you don't get in and do that unless you've already had a taste of that. Somebody's trained you on to do this. Otherwise, you're going to go down flames, and you can lose a ton of money. It's like buying a, you know, man, it's like risk. It's like doing contracting on for stock. Man, you can turn out, borrow a bunch of money and be in the hole big time. The same thing applies to ACOs. They kind of lure you in because you won't be at risk for 3 years. I'm not sure currently that I believe that has been extended by the federal government, but eventually they will have to go risk. And that's when they first go in, understand the hospital is going to look at your medical loss, MLRs, medical loss ratio. And after the first year or two, they're going to start culling the herd. and they'll start looking at their A and B providers, and all the C and D's, the D's are gone. So they'll be kicked out if they're not up to snuff, because the hospital has to operate the same thing as an HMO. They're going to have to keep the efficient providers, and they cannot keep the guys that are going to sink the ship. So be aware of that when you go in there, that you may not be there 2 or 3 years later, and then sooner or later everybody has to go risk, and they're going to shift that risk from the hospital to the providers.
So if someone's looking to go full risk today, like you've done, what sort of advice would you give them?
In order to do that, they have to have an existing contract with a well, first of all, they better have a track record to show the HMO on their medical loss ratio. So it's all about, it's not about us all looking at each other and say we're great docs and then we all treat patients good and our patients are healthier than everybody else. It's to look at somebody to take a look at what your hospitalization rate, admits per thousand, bed days per thousand. How many things do you do in your office? Do you freeze off skin lesions for your patient? Do you send everybody to the dermatologist? We cut everybody's toenails that wants to have, or do I have to send everybody to the podiatrist, or do I do that in the office? We do that for our patients. It's a great service to patients. They love it for us. Do you do these kind of things? Patient has COPD exacerbation. Do you give nebulizer treatments in the office? Can you work to get the weight down with patients? Do you do all these things? If you say, no, I don't do that, I send them all off, then you should never join an ACO or think about any kind of risk, because you will not be there very long and you're going to lose money in the process.
So they really need to look at their own practice first and see if it's amenable to accepting risk, because they're already doing some of those things. What about from a systems perspective? I know we've had some discussions on EMR and consultants. What are your thoughts on that in going into this type of space?
Well, first of all, whether you do EMR or don't do EMR. Now, I think that right now we're the most efficient providers in the state of Florida for Humana. And so we have paper. Now, so EMR does not help you improve your efficiency or your patient care. Absolutely not. If you're a good doc, you have a good organization, if you use paper or EMR, you're going to be equally good. The problem is with EMRs, look, so suddenly I don't care who you are, you're going to lose 15-20% efficiency. So you're going to see 15 or 20, every doc or PA or nurse practitioner is going to see 15 or 20% less patients at the end of the year if you're EMR than if you're straight paper. If you have an organized, I have an exceptionally organized paper system, just like you can have good EMR and poor ER, I have an exceptionally good paper system. So under that states, if you're EMR, you better, if you're EMR, you're going to see 15 to 20% less patients per day and do the same amount of quality work as I do. So now you're going to pay I think it's either 1 or 2% penalty. But look, if I can see 20% more patients and I pay a 2% penalty, I'll pay that all day long.
And what about consultants? Do you need to bring in a big group of consultants to do this?
Absolutely not. That's kind of the issue that people don't understand. Look, it's not about having 15 consultants telling you what to do. Now, if you plan on doing ACO or risk, you better have an excellent consultant or somebody that's already can mentor you in how to do this, or there's about a 98% chance you're going to fail at this. Because the learning curve, you're going to lose too much process in the early form of the early learning curve to survive. So in that case, you need somebody, but you have to establish, if you're going to do this, you have to have HEDIS teams, MRA teams, you have to have your inside people that work on preventive medicine, and your docs. The key thing is the docs and the PAs have to focus and understand their role in this process. And once again, it doesn't help that you do 15 things great. It doesn't matter if you work on everybody's toenails and ears. If you don't get their cholesterol, get their diabetes down, then it's going to be a failure. As far as economically, you won't be able to survive. There has to be some mentoring in some fashion before you get involved. Otherwise, it's almost surely failure.
Fantastic. And you've talked about this idea of a health improvement organization. How do you see population health? There's this big talk about population health out there. Obviously, we're focusing on that. And you're doing a chunk of this. How do you see that fitting in?
You're talking about fitting in with the Medicare risk score ACOs. Yeah, that's the cornerstone. I mean, look, the cornerstone. Look, there's 20,000 things that kill the three of us that are talking right now, including our audience. Of those 20,000 things that kill us, two of them make up 40%. That's heart attack and stroke, and probably 90% of that's just cholesterol. So if we can get people's cholesterol, we've won a one heck of a battle. So, and usually with generic medication, so we get people under 100 if they've had a stroke, for everybody, 100% under 100, and anybody that's had a heart attack, stroke, or has any kind of risk factor, we'd put them well below 70, not just 70, but somewhere down in the low 60s, 50s, 40s, or 30s, and suddenly you don't have people having heart attack, strokes. They're not. If you don't have chest pain, you don't go to the ER for chest pain. So how simple is that? So there's also huge data that shucks about statins, for example, in use and in decreased risk of not overall mortality, but a lot of cancer death. So you fight that one battle, and you're already a quarter of the way there. Same thing was working on that. Once again, you lose if you have patients lose weight, you extend their lifespan. Bada bing, bada boom. Now it's no more complicated than that, and it's doable. Everybody gives up on it, but we have patients lose weight all the time. It's a matter of approaching it in a symptomatic way. They don't have to buy anything. They don't have to do any special thing, but we have to do a little coaching. We use no dietitians. We do it all ourselves, our in-house. It's simple. It's uncomplicated. So those are the key things. You bring everybody back. Their labs are paid for under Medicare Advantage. The government's great program, so they have capitated. Their labs are already paid for, so no cost to the HMO. What they do is that patients that reduces their adversity to stop and saying, hey, I'm not going to go and get my labs done. So we try to check the hemoglobin A1Cs every 3 months. So we have much better control on our diabetics, much lower hemoglobin A1Cs on average, and so by and large they don't go blind as quickly, they don't lose their kidney function as well, they don't end up on dialysis, and they just last longer with less complications. So it's simple.
Wow. So it's, yeah, very simple approach. Are there any, now that you've been very successful at managing, say, the early winners where you can do it for a large percentage of that 40% with diabetes and cholesterol, are there other areas you're looking at now?
We do a lot of screenings on our patients. Everybody that comes in, we screen them for peripheral arterial disease. We screen them for pulmonary functions, tests for anybody that's ever smoked. So we establish those early COPDers, and people have peripheral arterial disease. And, you know, one of the things, just because we know that you're at risk for heart attack and stroke doesn't mean you're going to take your medication for that. So, well, I don't believe in pills. We said, well, look, you have peripheral arterial disease. Look at how these numbers here. These numbers are from you. Oh wow! In that case, well, maybe it is important to get off cholesterol medication, get your numbers down. So you bring the risk factor at light to the individual, because once again, they're responsible for getting themselves healthy. We can only try to help them. Same thing with or smokers, or somebody has been smoking. If they're still around a smoker, and you do a pulmonary function test, which we don't charge patients for, and say, hey, look at this, man. They say, what's these little lines? The big line is where your lung is supposed to be for your age, sex, and race. These little lines, that's where you're at right now. So, and they say, but my grandmother smoked till she was 95. Well, look, this is your lungs on smoke, so you need to quit smoking now. And or if you're around people that smoke, you need to stay away from them. Don't let them smoke around you, because you're down to the point where you're going to be short of breath in the next 3 or 4 years, and you're going to be on nebulizers and other things and at risk of dying from some kind of pneumonia or end up in the hospital frequently with COPD exacerbation. So we do screenings at no charge to our patients that help us not only identify them, but give us some leverage to help them change their health habits. Or allow us to help them treat things that can prevent them from turning into, a much more dangerous condition over a short period of time. So it's cost-effective, and once again, it's focused effort,
So you focus on the patient side of this and how you get them to begin to change their behavior. How about providers? Have you found any difficulty in identifying providers who were effective at this, or are all providers potentially good at doing this?
No.
What about that?
And it's a difficult role, because people have to see, the problem is with physicians, PAs, and nurse practitioners. We have all been, including myself, been trained to fix the patient's chief complaint. So if the patient comes in and they've got they have some toenail fungus, and they've got an earache, and they've got some low back pain, and they've got some kind of itchy skin on their chest. Look, when they come in to see me, the first thing I'm going to look at is say, then they've taught us in medical school and in residency, treat the chief complaint, treat them and treat them. They're happy. They're happy. You're happy. They got what they wanted. You got paid. You can see the next patient. But the problem is that's not what kills people. That patient is not aware that his LDL is 138, and if he is aware, it's no big deal because his prior physician told him it's not that bad. Wait a minute, not that bad. How bad does it have to be? Just some bad? So it's our, so what we have to do is to turn around and say, hey, we have to look. And so you got to change your thinking. It's a paradigm shift. I'm going to treat what they're here for today, but that's not what kills them. The patient doesn't have the medical knowledge to know that their long-term, intermediate, and even short-term health is at risk for things that don't, they can't see it. They can't see their blood pressure. They can't see their cholesterol. They can't see their elevated blood sugar, and they don't feel it. So to them, it's not that important. So you have to change the physicians to focus in on the things that affect people's morbidity and mortality. And we can actually improve their health, and that's the whole consequence behind being at risk, is you improve people's health and there's some residual income to be shared with the MSO or the provider at that point. So some physicians can make that shift. Others say, look, I'm just here. Look, I'm just going to trick what's wrong with them. Well, and my patients love me. Well, that may be true, but you're an extremely poor risk doctor, and you're going to sink your, you're going to go down in flames and or sink your organization. They cannot deal with you. So you try to motivate people and talk to them and get them to change their perspective, but you can't do that with everybody. Some people won't change.
Good points. And your practice is both rural and urban. Is this a model that could be put in anywhere?
Yeah, it's urban, rural. We're on the seacoast. We're way in the central part of the state. We're in Jacksonville. We're in Daytona, St. Augustine, and so we're scattered out all over the place. So there is no this same model works everywhere. The focus is on patient integration to with provider to get the patient to accept that we need to improve their health, but then focus on the key things, not 100 things, not 200 things, but you pick 4 or 5 areas that you want to succeed in, and it's amazing. Suddenly patients aren't in the hospital. And it's not a matter of us keeping them out of the hospital or kicking them out of the hospital, because we don't do that. If they don't feel sick, they don't have a COPD exacerbation, they don't have 3-plus pitting edema because we got them to lose weight now, that's disappeared, they don't go in the hospital. And that revenue that would have been wasted on an unnecessary hospitalization where nothing is fixed, it's just they're just going to be treated until the acute event is over, that money is not wasted, and the patient's life is not risk, because that's available back to the organization for residual distribution. So what a wonderful thing. All that time and effort, there's reimbursement for that. So it's a matter of focus.
What you're doing for your patients is really incredible, and you're growing. Do you anticipate continuing to grow this practice?
Oh, the opportunity. You know, the CMS, I believe, just said that there's the numbers just came out for increased Medicare Advantage growth through 2023. Huge growth anticipated. That's by CMS, and it's a cost saving to the federal government too. There's a disconnect between PPO and HMO. Now the HMO Medicare Advantage is actually very cost effective. The government saves the government. I think the government only pays 95% of Medicare or whatever to these guys. But because they focus on people on getting them healthier, not focusing on just treating the current event and sending them home. The federal government wants this to expand. So there's an opportunity for everyone, because this is an area of big expansion and for the Medicare Advantage and the Medicare Advantage, especially the Medicare Advantage Risk Program.
Great. You've done this as a provider. A lot of people are doing them in partnership with a hospital. Any preference, or is it one way better than the other?
For Medicare Advantage, it's extremely difficult. Almost always, if it works with a hospital, the deal is not going to survive. It's going to be because it's just their cross purposes. The hospital administrator there, and God bless him for being there, but they work across. You know, his goal is to do as many procedures as you can in the hospital, keep that hospital functioning, keep it there as a resource for the community. And our goal is to get our patients so healthy that they don't need to go in the hospital. You know, when they're there, we appreciate them. We've got to get them in immediately. We want great service for them. But our goal is not to provide a feedstock to keep the hospital running. And so suddenly they realize a lot of times when they notice that, in fact, the hospital census is dropping, this is a terrible thing. Well, it's not a terrible thing for the patient's health. It's a terrible thing for the hospital bottom line, and they're looking at it. They got to keep the hospital open, so it works across purposes with an ACO even, and especially with Medicaid HMO, or Medicare HMO. So, yeah, it works across purposes.
I think your point's
it's not a good in actuality. It's not a good fit.
I think you're right on target. Your points are proven out, given the data so far in ACOs, that those that have been more successful tend to be either physician operated or located in areas with high costs to begin with, like South Florida. We're right about up on the end, Roy. Is there one final thing you would like to add, or anything else you'd like to add to today's show?
The key thing is the risk environment is a tremendous opportunity for those patients, for those providers that really try to do many things for their patients in their office, and try to make that a place that costs their patients a lot less. You offer them more services. You see them whenever they feel like they're sick. You have an open door for them, and that you can work with your specialist. And really tell them, look, our goal is to do the things that are important for our patients and ship them over to you and make sure you receive full cost when things happen. But the rest of the time, we're going to get them so healthy, we don't hope they're not going to darken your door. But thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Roy. That's been a fantastic time with you today. Thank you. Back to you, Greg.
Hey, Fred and Greg, thanks.
Well, there you have it. That'll have to be the last word on today's broadcast. I want to thank our guest, Dr. Roy Hinman of the Island Doctors, founder and CEO of IDEA Island Doctors, for his time and insights today. Do follow this integrated and growing primary care system on Twitter at @Island_doctors and on the web at islanddoctors.com. We do this weekly at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern on Wednesdays. Join us next week for our special guest, Dr. Rishika Fernandopoli, MD and CEO of the company called Iora Health, a Boston-based direct practice innovating at the spear of organizational and financing of medicine. Until then, for Fred Goldstein, this is Greg Masters saying bye now.